Hey, welcome to the Meat House. Jeff here.
And Chris here.
All right. Back again.
Yeah, another week for meat. This is such a curse. I mean,
I know, right? Week after week after week, we just
get to have good meat.
Hang out. And
good company. And
yeah.
May I be cursed like this forever?
Right? there are worse things to do than to have to do than get together with your buddy every week.
And yeah.
Bottle of meat and just chat about whatever comes up and whatever seems interesting that week. And
yeah, pretty much. I'm going to be honest. I'm really looking forward to this. We have a campfire mead this week.
Yes.
And you couldn't tell me. It was from Oppenheimer Meadery. It's Oppenheimer Meadery. And
Tequila, Washington. I want to say it's a suburb of Seattle. But yeah.
I'm kind of looking forward to this because, it's a lovely golden color. And I'm looking forward to this. But Viking campfire, I want to know.
Right. And here's the thing. I saw this in my mead rack that it's been sitting there for a while. I don't know what makes this campfire. Is the honey bushade? Is there an ingredient that was smoked or smoky? Is there like some kind of honey, like the meadow foam that has a kind of a
campfire feel to it?
Yeah, like a marshmallow feel to it. Like, I don't know. And I couldn't find notes on it either.
So, okay.
I looked online. I looked in my email.
I'm more confident about this one than the first meat I had that didn't have a label.
Well, that's something.
Yeah, right? The cap smell was not my favorite. So, but as I'm pouring this meat, I'd like to thank our listeners here. We really appreciate you joining us in week after week and telling us what you think and, you know, spending time with us. We really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've gotten a little bit of a jump in listenership since we got onto the podcast platforms, and I'm going to go ahead and go through the list again because, you know, if you guys are listening and going through the trouble of going to our website and downloading the episode to listen to it that way, there are easier ways to do it. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Pocket Cast, iHeartRadio, Pandora. You can find us on Deezer, Podcast Addict, Player FM, Podchaser, CastBox, Good Pods, Podcast Index. You've got options. And like, I use Podcast Addict, not trying to plug them or anything. I just find that it's a convenient app to use for my, you know, driving around and needing something to listen to needs.
And you can always find us on themeathouse.com and Facebook.
Absolutely. So, and hey, any of those places that you're getting your podcast, if you're using that app, you know, shoot us a review or rate us 5 stars or, you know, something to help with the engagement. We would love that of you.
React a little bit with us here. We enjoy your company. We'd love to get your feedback.
Anything that helps us get to other people. I mean, we had a decent amount of like growth week after week from just, you know, being out there on our website and like, you know, having a little Facebook where people could see us. But, you know,
now, this is better.
Yeah, this is
better. And we're still working on like Spotify and what was the other one?
Amazon. You know, the big players here are a little slow to pick us up.
Well, they're also they have a bigger requirement.
They have a volume thing going. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll get there. But you know, right now we're working on it. So the meat of the day is the Viking campfire. Like I said, literally for this, it's got a very light yellow color, light straw color.
Right. This is light to maybe medium on the outside, but yeah, light straw, cheats the glass.
No legs. It's got a woodsy campfire smell to it.
That's chocolate heavy.
Oh, that is chocolate.
The cacao nib on it.
Oh my gosh. That surprises me.
Yeah. This is good quality cacao nib, I can tell.
I wouldn't know that. I wouldn't know that good quality cacao nib if I tripped over it. But that's a deep chocolate smell there. I like that.
The cacao nib comes through real hard in that first sip, too.
It really does. I wasn't expecting that much chocolate. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying, oh my God, that slaps.
It is a hit you in the face with chocolate. I'm not getting much in the way of smokiness or anything. I'm willing to bet Viking campfire, this is an attempt at a s'mores meat. It's chocolate.
That's strong.
The marshmallowy kind of thing, I don't know if I get that precisely.
I've not tasted marshmallow.
The chocolate is, this is a chocolate meat.
It's chocolate meat.
This is chocolate meat.
Am I mad?
Nope. No. No.
But I was hoping for more of a campfire feel to it, with smokiness or marshmallow or something else other than chocolate. Chocolate meat's cool. I'm good with that.
Cacao Mead. Yeah, I'm here for it,
I'm here for
but
it.
I wouldn't mind a second dimension to it. I
Yeah.
don't, then this has been sitting on my shelf for a while. We might have had something that kind of faded in the interim years. I mean,
But that just means we're gonna take this idea and run with it somewhere else.
right. Yeah, no, this is, we were talking, I think, last week about the idea of a s'mores mead,
Yeah, we
and
did.
yeah, there you go. This is kind of in that wheelhouse, isn't it?
All I need is marshmallow and graham cracker, and I got a
Right.
s'more.
And you know, how would we get that graham cracker, especially the marshmallow? I think we're set on using
Metal foam.
bomb.
But we talked, I think I mentioned like adding oat to it to give a, I'm told that gives a crusty, bready flavor, but I don't know what else I could do for that
Right,
either.
yeah. I think like adding rolled oats or adding
Nothing?
off the top of my head, I don't remember the process for that. I know there are a couple other options in that same vein, but rolled oats, rolled wheat, the kind of not rolled,
Plate.
flaked wheat, because basically when they're doing the flaking process, they take whatever grain it is, whether it's wheat or oats or whatever, and they press it between a pair of like really hot rollers. So not only does it flatten it and get the flake, but it also gelatinizes some of the starch in it, so it doesn't like ferment.
Okay.
And that makes it like you get some of the cloudiness from that. You get some of the like the residual resistant to fermentation like grain character from it. That's why
Okay.
you want to use a flaky oat or flaky, wheat, grain, rye, whatever, with what you're doing, so that you get some of that character like hanging out, staying.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I got to look into that. I don't know how to do graham cracker yet, but it's just a matter of time.
We'll figure that out. This is good input for future projects.
Yes, it is. It is.
Mwahaha.
Mwahaha. Get my evil scientist jacket back out.
Exactly. And speaking of evil scientists, today we're talking about microbiology.
Microbiology. Well, at least science is not as much evil, but here we go.
Well, we'll see what we can get with it. But hey, before we get into that topic,
Bacchus and Barleycorn.
Bacchus and Barleycorn, we have to thank them. They have been our sponsors since we got started. And hey, did we mention to you guys listening at home? Thank you, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything you're doing as far as listening, shooting us ratings and things like that, God, we appreciate that.
We really do. I mean,
It's fun to, hang out and talk to my buddy and drink a bottle of mead together and just, bullshit.
and we would do this with or without you guys, but it's more the more company, the better. I love being social. As Jeff has mentioned in episodes past, I don't think I've met a stranger yet.
No, the fact that we get to throw out ideas and get feedback back from you guys, get to, be part of that.
You're teaching us too. You're learning from what your feedback. We love it.
The more we get this dialogue flowing between us and the mead community at large, the better for everybody involved. God, we appreciate that.
Yes. Back to Bacchus though, but Bacchus, they've been there since before we started our first cast together, the two of us here. And we did not ask for their sponsorship. They offered. They were so enthusiastic about this. They offered sponsoring us, and we really appreciate it. And Jake and the guys over there do great work, a lot of information, a lot of good product, a lot of great help. For anything you want to do, if it deals with fermentation, they probably got something there.
Right. If they don't have it in stock or available immediately, they probably know how to get it. Whether it's the ingredients, the information you need, the
The
equipment you
equipment you
need,
need, yeah. And even,
what a
not just
fantastic
for beer,
resource.
wine, and mead. But for cheese, kombucha,
Yeah.
yogurt.
Yeah, we're talking, it honestly wouldn't surprise me if he branched into mycology at some point too, because I know from talking to him, he has a number of mycologist customers that
Oh,
come in
yeah.
there for, it turns out, hey, that the light malt extract we use for making beer, that's also good for making agar for, mushrooms and stuff. And
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but it wouldn't shock me either. But Bog Bog has been a good friend of ours and good people there for a long, long time. And if you go there online, you want to start your meat adventure, use our code.
MHP10.
Thank you, MHP. I screwed up last time. I wasn't going to do it this time, so I kind of looked at you on that one there. I said, I am not going to do that
You
twice.
lay it up, I'll get it in the basket.
There we go. Teamwork works.
Get 10% off of your purchase there. Their prices are already really competitive because they know they got to compete. But that extra 10%, it just gives you a little something that lets them know that their investment in us, in making us a thing that you can use as a resource, is paying off for them too. Everybody wins here, really.
It's a great thing. I mean, you get a great deal on, quality equipment. And you even have, like we said many, many episodes ago, they have a starter mead kit. Everything you'll absolutely need to start your first mead, it's right there in a box, ready to rock.
Yeah, you can, and you've got options as far as adding bottles to it, or just the equipment, just the chemicals and things like that. However you want to play your hand there, you've got options. It's great.
So thank you, Bacchus. So
Thank
anyway,
you.
back to what we're doing. We're talking about mycology. Microbiome,
Microbiology. We're
microbiome.
not talking about mycology, which is the science of mushrooms and the fungus and
You
things
said
like
the
that.
word and it stuck in my head.
Well, yeast are a fungus.
That's true.
We're talking about yeast, and we're talking about the microbiology is such a broad topic, but we're talking about the process of, storing and collecting and propagating yeast, which, why would we want to talk about that? Because let's face it, yeast isn't expensive at the homebrew store.
No, you can, and even my son proved that a bread yeast can make a
Decent enough.
drinkable mead. I mean, is it good? It's drinkable.
Well, I mean, geez, if you're gonna make a 1 gallon batch of mead, you need like what, half a packet of a Laubin style yeast, like 71B. What does that packet cost?
$3, $4.
If that,
Yeah.
yeah. If you're gonna go a little bit more bougie and you're gonna use a bread yeast and get like one of the liquid culture packs, that you have to store in the refrigerator, that's like what, 10, 12 bucks?
Yeah, maybe, and
It's
you'll get a lot
not
out of that, believe me.
much, not much at all. But
So the question is, why would you want to keep a yeast?
well, there are a number of reasons. Let's say, for one, maybe you have a wild yeast, and we talked about before. There are some things like apple juice, for example. It just wants to ferment.
Yeah, I mean, it's on the skin of the apple.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you'll get really wild, interesting flavors off of that. You just really like this year's apple variety, and you want to say, "Hey, let me repitch that. How do I save that?"
Okay, I have no idea.
Sometimes, at this point, like Bacchus carries mostly like Omega in their yeast selection. They used to have Y yeast, and Y yeast had like a seasonal thing. Like every quarter, they had a different two or three styles of yeast that they would release from their vault. And I think Imperial does this too. They do a seasonal lineup. I don't think Omega really does it as much. But if you have a yeast that's a little bit rare, like at one point, Y Yeast released a yeast that they sampled from the brewery, I think at Czeska, which was, that's my favorite brand of Czech beer. You can kind of buy it in the States. It's sold under the brand Czechvar instead of Budvar, but Budvar is Budweiser in English, and so there's a trademark dispute because they sold the rights to Budweiser to Anheuser-Busch post-World War II, and it's a long story. Anyway,
I'll be honest, not what I want to hear.
yeah, no, it's legalese and crap like that. Who cares? But my favorite brand of Czech beer, it has that right flavor combination of grainy and fruity and hoppy and stuff like that that I really love. I wanted to save that. Because it's not available all the time. It's one of their quarterly things, and they don't have the same stuff every spring or fall or whatever. They have a variability to it. So in that case, like the first time I got into this years and years and years ago, and I have since lost that because my freezer died. I said, okay, well, I'm going to try this. I don't have the tech to do a lager at the moment anyway, but I'm going to try it. And I'm going to save some of this yeast so that I can, as I advance in my craft and get better at it, I can try it again with better tech
Okay,
too.
cool. Now, before we jump into how we do this, now we're talking about wild yeasts, right?
We're talking about wild yeast. We're talking about cultured yeast. We're
Culture yeast.
talking about saving yeast.
Okay.
Or we could even get into reusing a pitch of yeast.
So let's say, for example, I pitched a batch of meat I like.
Right.
like the character notes I get off that Cuban yeast. So, and I can harvest yeast from that batch.
Yeah.
To use again.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, and here's a crazy thing, too. Let's say we're going to make a very high gravity meat. You and I don't generally make like the 18 to 20% ABV
meat. No, I don't anymore.
But what if we wanted to make, you know, a heavy hitting kind of winter meat with a lot of like, you know, let's do a 20% Boucher with like fig and raisin and stuff like that and make it
heavy warm. Christmas meat.
Yeah. Like we're going to have like a little 2-3 ounce snifter by the fire. And then we're going to go to bed and we're going to sleep nice because we had that little bit of heavy stuff.
Yeah, this is a meat I can chew.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. We could start that instead of just using like the dry yeast packets or the liquid yeast. We could make a standard strength mead.
Okay.
And then we take that off of the lees into secondary, take that lees. We could rinse the dead stuff, separate it from the live stuff, and put that live stuff into the new one and have that entire colony right ready to go for their big 20% batch.
That
or
okay, that would be awesome.
Just put that 20% batch on top of the lees. We might risk a little bit of the surly aging kind of thing, but it's still very possible. And you think about it, this is very like napkin math, but every like roughly every milliliter of compacted live yeast on that lees is about 2 billion cells.
Not an insignificant amount.
No. So if we're talking about two little like 5 gram packs versus a, you know, a half an inch to 3/4 of an inch of lees on the bottom of your fermenter worth of yeast, what do you think is going to start better and ferment better?
The one's already started going. It's right. Already established. Yeah, that would be. And so if I just, okay.
So we're talking about a kind of a broad topic here.
Okay.
Of, you know, yeast and how to, we're going to talk about how to store it, how to reuse it, how to harvest it, how to collect it in the wild too.
Okay. So basically I could take a shot glass of the lees at the bottom of my mead. And dump it into the batch. Would that work?
Yeah, it would still. It would. Part of that lees is dead.
Yeah, I got that, but that would just fall to the bottom more likely.
Yeah, it's on the bottom because it's in suspension anyway.
Yeah.
So there are easier ways to separate the good stuff from the bad stuff.
Okay, that's what I was hoping you were going to say because I'm sitting here.
That's called like washing or rinsing your yeast, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about storage. We'll talk about collecting and getting. Stuff because the world is covered, guys, with yeast. There's different strains, different varieties, and oh my god, it's everywhere.
Can you safely dry it for use later?
That is tricky. I think that takes like a freeze dryer or
more
expensive equipment.
This is not my wheelhouse, so I'm going to ask weird questions.
Yeah, of course. Even freezing it takes stuff that like the average home brewer probably doesn't have in one particular step that I'll get to. Let's talk about saving yeast by freezing first.
So right.
Because let's say, yeah, no, we have like the Y yeast or the Imperial special strain of the month that we want to save, you know, whether we harvest it from the lees of our ferment or we just got the little packet and we want to hold on to it. What do you think the biggest problem is for saving yeast long-term in the freezer?
Okay, these are living organisms. If you freeze it too long, they're just going to die on you or go to an inert state that you can't recover from.
Yes, but the biggest problem actually is the fact that they're a living organism and the bulk of their body, if you call it that, it's a single-cell organism.
Mm-hmm.
It's made of water.
And that could destroy the yeast, couldn't it?
What happens to water when it freezes?
It breaks down cellular walls. Expands.
It expands.
It'll break down cellular walls.
That kills it.
Yeah.
So you've got to have the ability to protect it in that frozen state. And basically what we want to do is create what's called a cryopreservative. And what we're going to do to do that is we're going to do, by volume, a mixture of vegetable glycerin. Obviously, use food-safe vegetable glycerin.
Of course.
One part of that to three parts water. We probably want to use like distilled water or a reverse osmosis deionized water, like as pure as you can get it.
Okay.
And this is the part where I am told it is advantageous to pressure sterilize this. If you have a pressure canner, like 15 to 20 minutes at 15 PSI is ideal. That sterilizes the fluid
Okay.
to the point where it's not going to have anything else in it. I would think 45 minutes to an hour in a like a Instant Pot,
Okay.
the lower pressure
Instant
home
Pot.
pressure cooker
Yeah. Okay.
would do it for you. I'm not 100% certain. The one time I tried this, and again, my freezer died on me with no warning, and I discovered it
So you
weeks
lost all
later.
your yeast,
I
okay.
lost my yeast samples and I had no verification that it worked. The first time I tried this, though, I didn't do any kind of sterilization to it. I just mixed the glycerin in the water and then mixed the yeast, and boom.
Did it work?
I don't know.
Okay.
I never,
You never got to because the freezer died. Okay, got it.
the freezer died, so everything thawed, and I couldn't revivify anything.
I'm going to throw my opinion. I like sanitation. I'm a really big, we've gone over this many, many times. I'm a huge proponent of working with sanitized equipment.
Right. The cleaner you can get it, the better. I would think even like taking this up to a bare simmer for 15, 20 minutes, as opposed to like pressure cooking it, would be advantageous, if not, better than nothing. The thing is, yeah, you want to get it to a temperature that will help sanitize it, and then you want to let it cool. And basically, you take your yeast sample, whether that's going to be like a washed yeast or your yeast packet or whatever.
Define washed yeast.
We'll get to that in just a second.
Okay.
Because that's getting into the harvesting from a
Okay, go. Okay, go
like
ahead.
a ferment. You want to mix that half and half with your cryopreservative. So just by volume, if you've got a shot glass of your yeast trub that you pulled off of the bottom of a ferment that you really liked, you want another shot glass of the mixture of glycerin and water. You put that in a test tube or a slant or something like that. Just you can search online for things like vials or slants, things like that. Add those to it, put that in your freezer. Generally, when you're talking about freezing something long term, it's a really good idea to have like an ice pack or something with it, because your temperature doesn't maintain your freezer doesn't maintain a constant temperature. It maintains a range of temperatures. It
Okay.
may be as much as like 5 or 10 degrees,
When it gets to a
actually.
certain point, it turns on. When it gets to another point, it turns off.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah,
Yeah.
gotcha.
So it'll freeze and it'll hit a certain marker and say, okay, that's good enough. And it'll stop and it'll be off until it hits another, like
Much
the upper
warmer.
bound, and then it'll turn on again.
So you're going from 42 to 30, or 40 to 35,
Something like
back and
that.
forth, whatever it is.
Exactly. Yeah, it can go up and down and up and down. Having a couple sandwiching your test tubes between a couple ice packs,
Keeps it constant.
yeah, it mitigates that and keeps things very similar across the board, because those will also raise and lower, but they'll kind of bleed off the same temperature
Yeah.
constantly because
Okay.
they're there.
Cool.
It's an idea.
Okay. Pardon, just a second. What's the percentage on this freaking
This is
wine?
for
This is a 14?
well, and last week you were giving me shit for, being a little tipsy, a little too ahead of time. So,
Oh, my turn apparently. Whoa, this can be
Karma!
karma. This man, that last week was 14 and a half. This one, this one's starting to hit me kind of hard here.
So,
Please
yeah.
continue.
You can, and storing yeast is, if you can do the sterilization process, we're talking about glycerin, we're talking about water, we're talking about your yeast. It's easy enough to do, and everybody's got a freezer in their apartment or a house, or
If you got a refrigerator, you got a freezer, it's almost a given.
almost a given, right? I would find it like a side pocket of your deep freezer, not gonna go messing with if you're looking for a the rack of ribs or whatever you're gonna smoke this weekend. But that's me. Freezing and storing yeast that way is relatively easy, and
Okay.
then to get it back, all you need to do is basically make a yeast starter. And a yeast starter can be when we're
Yeah,
rehydrating yeast, for
just
example,
warm water.
warm water, for one, we want some nutrient generally. So like some gopherum is great.
Gopherum.
Something for it to eat, like a little bit of honey or a little
Fermi
light
K,
malt
Fermi. Oh, yeah.
extract. Yeah, it just basically you're making a light mead or a light beer, something that would equate to maybe 2% ABV, but just something for the yeast to, as they're thawing out and waking up, snack on.
Okay.
And then as soon as you see bubbling again, boom, you're ready to pitch.
And just you simply matter of warming it up with a nutrient-rich environment, and you're ready to rock again.
Exactly. Yeah, you can expand that starter from, maybe a half a cup to maybe a liter or two if you're going to do a big batch or if you're going to pitch multiple batches, but
Or keep more batches for later in this
exactly.
case. Yeah, this. So, okay. Now, with that simple statement, I wanted to ask, let's say I found a yeast I really like. I've used Quebec, had nice notes off the offshoot notes I really enjoyed with that mead, and I save it and I make another one. I'll say I've saved an ounce of the liquid for yeast culture for the next round, and I put it in the next batch. If after I've racked that off, the yeast culture left in the bottom of that one is the same yeast as it was the first round.
No.
Okay.
So that's where you're going to want to take notes because a yeast is a living organism,
Yeah,
right?
this was
And
our question.
well, we're talking about generational half-lives. A generational half-life for a human being, we're talking about like Gen X, Gen Ys, and Gen Z, like what, 15, 20 years?
Yeah,
It's
like.
big. Generational half-life for a yeast cell is hours, maybe days.
Okay.
And so,
Less than I thought.
you're talking about a every generation has the possibility for some kind of variation in it, some kind of, mutation in the expressions and things like that. And sometimes those will be good, sometimes those will be bad. More often than not, those mutations are going to be not present, not dominant kind of
Not
things.
what you had the first round.
Right, but they're not prevalent enough that you're going to see them anyway, right? But sometimes those expressions will be selection, whether it's natural or imposed, like we're doing with, breeding and culturing and things like that. We tend to provide for things, and those will go for things that are advantageous. So a selected trait will be something that helps the yeast survive and breed and multiply.
Okay.
Sometimes that expresses itself, and sometimes it just really doesn't. What we want to do when we're talking about reusing yeast like this, we want to make notes as far as generations. And when I say Gen 1, Gen 2, things like that, you have to understand there's going to be multiple generations between what I'm labeling as Gen 1 and what I'm labeling as Gen 2. We're
Because
talking
hours,
about
days, yeah.
A downstream effect,
Yeah.
essentially. So, if I take a yeast packet of K1V or a little envelope of the Voskvike from Omega, I'm going to call that my Gen 1. And then I'm going to pitch that into, an orange blossom mead.
Okay.
If I sample that, the yeast detritus at the end of that and use that for future stuff, I'm going to call that Gen 2. And then, if I keep using that, Gen 3, Gen 4, Gen 5, you can go, from what I've been told, a lot of home brewers will go up to five generations and not see any major like changes or mutations in their system. Some home brewers, not home brewers, some pro brewers will go up to 10 generations
Wow,
on a single like a
that's a
pitch.
huge
Right.
time yeast-wise.
Right. That's and you think about that, like a 20 barrel system, 20 barrels being 55 gallons.
A piece.
Well, sorry, a barrel being 55 gallons, 20 barrels being what, a few thousand
Yeah, a lot more.
gallons of beer. Do that 10 times. That's 10 times you don't have to pay for yeast.
Yeah, I
It
see the advantage. I
makes
see the advantage.
sense.
So, okay, now the next question in my personal logic, addled mind right now, looking at my book class. Let's say I found the yeast. I really like this, the characters of this particular yeast. I save that yeast and I cultivate it to a liter of that yeast. And then I use an ounce of that in the next batch. that same and store the rest of it and announce that in another batch, is that going to be the same batch there, or is it going to be a difference even then?
Yeah, there's the possibility for those differences. So that's why you want to label it, like Voskvike Generation 4, Generation 5, Generation 6. If you get something that is aberrant to the standard Voskvike and you like it and you want to save it, that becomes, Beta Yeast 235 Generation 1.
Okay,
And
gotcha.
you just go from there.
This is very science, and although I love science, I'm not really good at it.
Right. And this is the average homebrewer is probably not going to need to know this very much. Let's say, for those of you listening at home, you're content just, buying your Lavvan or your Omega or whatever yeast that you
Generally,
like
I
to
am.
use. Me
Generally, I
too.
am too.
Me too.
I'm good with just getting the packet of yeast.
I don't use this. I kind of dusted this off of the old electric meatball upstairs because, yeah, no, I'm using this more in mycology where it matters, where you don't get to take the shortcuts you do with
Yeah,
homebrewers.
you do the culinary mushroom stuff and that, and you make good stuff, man.
Well, and there are more steps to making mushrooms than there are to making,
The mead yeast.
yeah, or just any kind of
But
homebrew
back to
alcohol.
the mead yeast. I'm perfectly content using my 71B.
Right. 95 to 98% of the time, me too. Absolutely.
I mean,
Like,
unless I'm using Quebec for a particular reason, like hot weather or,
well,
the fruity aftertone or whatever.
95 to 98% of the time includes Quike for me. Like a cultured yeast that I can buy at Bock's and Barleycorn or the homebrew store of my choice. Why go anywhere else? It's dirt cheap. It's consistent. The people that make this, like Omega and Lavvan and Fermentis for like the US05 and the SO4.
They make the same yeast again and again and again, and it's
And
awesome.
it's so good. It's so, you can trust it. I do. But once in a while, you're going to find something that, like, can I save this for later? And this is one of those episodes where I want you to be able to have this in your back pocket to say, okay, if that comes up, I know what to do.
Yeah,
Or I can
that makes perfect sense to me.
go down this episode and know what to do. So, we talked about freezing yeast for long-term storage.
Okay, yeah,
A
got it.
frozen vial like that, 5 to 10 years.
Whoa,
Yeah,
okay.
you've got options when you freeze it that long. But you don't, if you're not going to use it for, a month or two, you don't need to go as far as freezing.
Did you just refrigerate?
Yeah, you
Okay.
can. Let's talk about harvesting yeast from a ferment.
Okay.
And because obviously we talked about you could just pitch right on top of a yeast cake or a yeast like a lees detritus whatever, and go for another ferment. And there's some dead yeast in there. There's some live yeast in there. If we,
Wild yeast is on the skin of a fruit, per se.
right.
Is this what we're talking about right now?
Well, no, we're talking about using reusing yeast.
Okay.
So let's talk about harvesting yeast from a finished batch.
Okay.
If we want to harvest that yeast and reuse it, we've got some options. We could just pitch on top of it, or we could do what's called washing. When you bottle your mead, generally you have like a little bit of the mead left over and a big thing of yeast.
Yeah, the detritus,
Yeah,
yeast thing at
the
the bottom. Yeah.
crud. Whether generally this would be better to do going from primary to secondary, but you could also do this at bottling. You've got crud at the bottom.
Yeah, and you try to avoid that when you're bottling. That's why you run it through a filter and all that.
What you can do at this stage, if you want to harvest that yeast, just mix it up. Get it all into liquid suspension. Maybe add a little distilled water to this too, if you need it to mix it. And then put that into either, a 1 gallon fermenter or a large jar or something like that, and let it settle.
Okay.
What you're going to see after an hour or two, what you should see if you've got it shaken up and mixed into, a decent liquid state, there's going to be a cake of solid stuff at the bottom, and there's going to be what you could call like a milky or a cloudy layer of stuff at the top.
Floaty debris.
If you let this sit at room temperature, you can pour off that like milky, cloudy layer into a separate jar, beaker, what have you, container. And then basically you can pitch or compost, that thick stuff at the bottom, that's the dead yeast. The cloudy stuff is up in the liquid.
Is the live
That's
yeast?
the live yeast.
Okay.
Then,
I had no idea which one was, I thought I'd know which one was which.
right. Then you can put that cloudy stuff into the refrigerator, let it settle. You'll see a yeast cake depositing down there, and that's basically, yeast that got cold and got sleepy and went to sleep.
They went Betty Bye. Yeah,
Right.
got
You can store that for a month or two easily and just warm it back up, feed it some nutrient, like we were talking about, get it a starter and get going. And Kveik especially is very robust, more robust than the average yeast. I've got Kveik in my fridge that I've been storing like that for 2 or 3 years. I'm pretty confident I could wake it back up anytime.
Nice.
I wouldn't try that necessarily with like a 71B or even a K1V like champagne monster, but Kveik is kind of its own especially robust little bastard.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I want to see this monster you have in your refrigerator now. Okay, so the floating part is the live yeast, and if it cakes down at the bottom and it gets cold, it's simply
Well, if it cakes down at the bottom when it gets cold, that's yeast. That's live yeast too.
live yeast too. Okay.
If you're talking about room temperature, if it like after you harvest this, you shake it all up, your lees, detritus and stuff like that
When
for
it's still warm, that's dead yeast.
right. That's the dead yeast.
Okay.
Or, maybe you've got some extra like little grains of spice or something like that that came through your bag. It'll also settle out there. So again, this is the idea is washing or rinsing, it's getting crap separated from the live stuff.
Okay. But it doesn't hurt anything per se.
No.
Okay. Well, that was my
And
question. So.
for long-term storage, you don't want dead yeast in there, just because they do what's called autolyzing. It's basically it's single cell death, and that breaks down the cells into crud. You'll get weird, bitter flavors from there, especially if the yeast decide that they need the nitrogen from those cells. If they decide they're going to cannibalize each other, then you can get some weird, bitter compounds like that, and that's what the basic process of surly aging is. That the yeast will, in a more or less contained environment, they'll cannibalize itself and break it down, and you'll get some compounds from there. Anyway,
Okay, so now we know how to wash it.
right. So we can reuse based on that, like again, 5 to 10 times. If the let's say 2020 happens again, there's another pandemic, and our supply chain breaks down, or
God
there's a
forbid.
Right, the Evergrande or whatever like goes sideways in another canal and shipping breaks down. We have to find yeast or we have to reuse yeast. You have options again. You can reuse yeast kind of 5 or 10 times. That's enough for people to figure out shipping worldwide. If you have, let's say, we're using a weird strain of Voskvike, and it doesn't even necessarily need to be a weird strain, but we have a strain of Voskvike. We have a weird flavor that we get out of it. Like maybe instead of the typical orange and citrusy notes, we get kind of a like a red fruit note.
Grapefruit, like something like that.
Right. And we want to isolate that, or we want to see if we can repeat that. Well, yeah, let's wash our yeast cake. Let's freeze a sample of that and let's try it again and just see. Maybe this is a weird mutation that makes something good. So the other thing we can think about though is wild yeast, because wild yeast are fun. They exist on the skins of fruits, on they're literally everywhere. Like if you haven't washed your hands in about 15-20 minutes, your skin is covered with wild yeast. You're the fruit that we're like snacking on as we're talking here. Like I'm holding up a little blueberry. For Chris, you see where it's like more white than
Yeah,
the dark blue?
that's yeast.
That's a little biofilm of yeast, probably.
Wow, and you can't get rid of it because it's going to come right back.
It's everywhere, everywhere, everywhere.
Mind you, this isn't going to stop me from snacking on this.
No. Our bodies are designed to be able to combat that and if break that down. That's why we have stomach acid, really. It's going to turn that into a minuscule amount of vitamin B12 that will actually be dietarily neutral or dietarily nutritious for us.
Okay, with that thought, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to say something now that you told me a long time ago, and I could not stop thinking about it. The detritus of my mead. is B12 rich.
Yeah, it is.
You could drink that and add B12 to your body without consequence. It's a texture thing more than a taste thing, but you could literally drink B12 from the detritus of a vat of
Yeah.
mead.
Well, if you go to a health food store, they have like big jars of nutritional yeast. It's like little yellow flakes. And a number of like the vegan cheese or vegan like snacky things that want a cheese flavor will actually use nutritional
Yeast,
yeast
yeah,
for that
I've
purpose.
made that for that very reason.
Basically, that's all it is. It's just dried yeast detritus, dead yeast cells.
Okay, all right, back to harvesting yeast, wild yeast.
Right.
Had to jump
So,
on that little tangent there because you brought it up.
no, it's yeast is good for you.
Okay.
But let's say, here's an idea that I had a while back where I would want a wild yeast from a specific location. Because for a while I kept bees. And I never really got to the point where I was getting a consistent year after year harvest. But wouldn't it be cool to have like an estate meet where me, Jeff Shouse, made a yearly mead with my honey. And sure, I could use whatever like 71B or K1V or Kvike or whatever like
Whatever
yeast
tickles your fancy.
that I liked, but what if I had a really cool like wild yeast strain that I harvested from my own backyard? How do I get that yeast strain?
Could you wash off the fruit?
You could. You can. Again, we're going to start with a really weak like yeast starter. You can take maybe like a half a quart jar's worth of water, add a couple tablespoons of sugar or honey or light malt extract, whatever, and then you've got all kinds of options. If you've got fruit growing in your backyard, whether it's a fruit you want to eat like blackberries or strawberries or whatever, you can just take those whole fruits and put those in your liquid there and just let them sit for a little while. You're going to get that yeast really going because you've given it something that it's so much easier than the fruit itself to digest, right?
Okay.
If you want to take like, let's say you have a tree that you're very fond of, you could even harvest some yeast off the bark of that tree. Just slice a little bit of the outer surface of that bark, put it in the same extract, see what happens.
Okay, I have a question now.
Yeah.
When I wash fruit, generally before I eat it, I generally do.
Yeah.
Does that get rid of the yeast, or does it? Or
Mostly
some stay.
some. How thoroughly are you washing it?
I rinse it. I'll be honest, I rinse.
I mean, if it were easy to remove this stuff, absolutely, then we wouldn't need stuff like star sand, right? You're probably leaving at least some part of it, but you're probably also, just the simple act of rinsing it and agitating a little bit probably removes a not insignificant, maybe three quarters of that biomass by itself. So yeast is small. Yeast has very short generations and can regenerate very quickly, especially if you give it like the weak little starter that we're talking about, where it's food and nutrients and stuff like that are really easily accessible to just metabolize and go.
Yeah, yeast junk food.
Basic, not even junk food, but the fact that let's put it this way, instead of being a hunter-gatherer that has to go and follow the mastodon and do the 2-day pursuit until it gets tired and they can stab it in the neck and let it bleed out. They have a personal chef that just brings them food 3 times a day.
Okay, well, that makes it much easier.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
had to ask that question
Yeah,
because
yeah, yeah.
a lot of people rinse their vegetables. I mean, I think a
Yeah.
majority do what I do, just rinse it off really good.
Right, or peel it or whatever the case is.
So let's say I have apples, and I know there's yeast on the apples now. I peel the apple and put it in a water medium or whatever with
Right.
a little bit of nutrition. Am I going to get the yeast out?
You absolutely, well, yeah, you can get the yeast off of that. The other thing we can do in terms of harvesting wild yeast, if you just have a nice, like a favorite spot in your yard, take that little quart jar with a half quart of, the light malt extract or honey or whatever, put a layer or two of cheesecloth over it and do the ring connector on your jar. So you get, you basically you're keeping the bugs out, but letting things that are small, like yeast
Yeast,
cells,
yeah.
go through. Let that sit in the middle of the yard for a few hours to a day.
And you have yeast.
Right, you have yeast from your spot.
Wow, okay.
And generally you will see it'll start to, it'll kind of look like a beer that's settled. It'll have a little ring of bubbles around the outside where it's starting to ferment. That's your cue that you've got yeast in your yeast trap. That's what we're making is a yeast trap. Whether we're putting a little bit of fruit in there or a little bit of bark, or we're just kind of letting it sit with some cheesecloth and letting whatever comes in there comes in there. That's how you sample wild yeast. And yeah, bear in mind, guys, like we have no shortage of cultivated yeasts that came from all over the world that have been, Omega and Lauvin, and these guys will harvest from established wineries or breweries or things like that, where these are, somebody is repeating these already. Somebody has gone to the trouble of saying, okay, I like this batch, not this batch. We're going to continue with this batch and go from here. We're going to save this and repitch. We're going to discard this. All of that started as wild yeast somewhere. So, this the fun of this, you can get real nerdy and geek out on this if you want and try something wild. This may just be a case where this is just something you've listened to once and you've stored in your back pocket to know, okay, well, hey,
I
3 years
can.
from now you can go, hey, oh my God, I pitched K1V and instead of like the usual flavor character, I got a little bit of a little bit of orange or melon flavor off of it that I can't explain with, the hops edition or the honey edition or whatever. I need to save this yeast and, try again and see if I can do that.
Do it.
Download this episode. Listen to my instructions. This is easy stuff.
It's something you can do. Wow, I mean, I don't know how the Viking Campfire has the effects. Me, it doesn't you. This stuff is sending me, man. I mean,
Well,
I'm like I. You've gone through. You're almost over the second glass, and I'm working on my second. But whoa.
I may just be a little bit more lucid because now I'm very switched into, hey, science.
Yeah,
And
man. You're very scientific. I love science. Don't get me wrong, but you're better. That's cool.
I'm a little bit more experienced in this. I kind of know that field. So this is not a like I'm not intimidated by this, but I know a number of people can be. But this is just a fun idea that I had. And for again, 90% of our listeners, 90% of the time,
No use.
this is again, this is something for you guys to store in your back pocket.
But honestly, goodness, I'm thinking now that I have this in my personal back pocket, this is something I might try in the future because I go to several farms in the surrounding Casey area,
Exactly.
and I am at least acquaintances with all these farmers that I go to,
Right.
and if I just left a cover a cheesecloth covered malty water out there while I have a conversation with my buddy over there, I could have something interesting. At the very least, it could be interesting.
Yeah, no.
And that would be kind of cool.
Give it 4 to 6 hours and you've probably got something. Also, maybe don't tell Rowan about this because the Vibes Mead Maker will be like, wild yeast, I don't even have to pay the bread yeast price for? Yes, please.
Oh my gosh, he is such an okay. When we describe my youngest son, Rowan, we said, well, he goes, what is he like? He's Rowan, and that's the best we can do because, even I remember teachers saying, well, no, my daughter saying, oh no, my brother's coming to class, and you've never had a student like him, and the teacher looking at my daughter saying, I've been a teacher for 25 years. There's nothing I haven't seen before, and then actually going to my daughter halfway through in the first 9 week period and saying, I apologize, you're right, I have never seen a child like this child because, oh my, I mean, he's smart. And he's quirky, and I love him to death, but I don't know where he got this thought process he has.
Well, and I think I've known Rowan since he was like 6 or 7, and the amount of energy he had at that age, including that thought process, was like, okay, I'm a little overwhelmed now.
This is the kid that jumped on the back of a large dog and ran him two laps around a yard because it was big enough. And the dog loved every second of it, but oh my God, I'm sitting here, dude, I have trouble keeping up with him. I mean, I love my dog son to death. He's smarter than me. I could not be happier about that. But his thought process is just so way above mine.
Well, and we, you know, in this hobby, we need people that are thinking outside the box and are getting a little bit weird and wild with stuff, but it can be overwhelming.
You can't be with a rowan. Love your own, really do. But anyway, but so let's go into a little bit of detail. So suppose I put this container for harvesting yeast in a blackberry field. Is it good for? It'd be good for any meat. I get that. That's kind of a foregone conclusion. Is it going to have blackberry characteristics per se, or is it just yeast?
It's just yeast. I mean,
Okay.
you could take individual blackberries and put that into your yeast trap, like a little weak meat or beer or whatever, must wort whatever to whatever you're using for your yeast trap, and you would probably get some blackberry flavor out of that. But mostly, what you're looking for here is just the yeast itself, and
Yeast is yeast.
right,
Okay.
and.
That was important because if I'm getting yeast off blackberries, it's a blackberry yeast.
Realistically, if you put your yeast trap under a blackberry bush, you're more likely than not to get the kind of yeast that will work well with blackberries because it can digest the blackberry and multiply, right?
Yes.
So,
But it's not necessarily a blackberry yeast. It's a yeast that works well with blackberries.
right,
Slight difference there.
and it's not necessarily like any better than anything else in the yard per se. It's just a slightly higher chance than normal that you got something that has done well on blackberries from
Okay.
s sample.
This has been, for me, I hope the rest of you, educational because this is kind of cool. I thought it'd be a lot more involved. I really did. I thought it would be you need this horribly expensive piece of equipment with this horribly expensive piece of other equipment. And apparently, no, not really.
The worst you're going to need is like when we were talking about freezing, ideally you have like a pressure canner or an Instant Pot. You'll want like test tubes or slants or something like that, like something you could freeze the stuff in.
And that's relatively expensive, really.
Right. This is plastic where you can get from like the American Scientific, I think, is the place I've gone through. Obviously the big box mega store online that we will not say the name of, but it's run by another Jeff with a very similar haircut.
Yeah.
You can get that.
Well, yeah. But okay, well that's cool because honestly, when you first pitched this idea of this episode to me, I was sitting here. I mean, we've talked about carbonic maceration, we've talked about pressurization, we've talked about carbonation, all these things. You need this and this and this, and this and this and this. This is just more and more stuff. This one is a jar.
Right. Yeah,
Yeast cloth.
like if you do any kind of like the what do I want to say, like the lazy homesteading that I like, where hey, all lacto fermented mustard seeds are great on a steak, and I'll jar those up. You've probably got some jars sitting around.
Oh yeah, those are Dollar Tree items.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Everybody's got a couple mason jars sitting around, or you can
Yeah,
get some
pasta,
pretty cheap.
empty pasta sauce jars,
Exactly. Yeah.
any
And
salsa jar. Come on, they're everywhere.
I said the ring connector for a pasta or for a quart jar,
For a
or
quart jar, yeah.
yeah. If you don't have the quart jars with the separate like ring and cap for canning,
Rubber bands would do it, wouldn't they?
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean that just anything to hold, make sure the bugs are out and everything else is
Yeah,
what comes in.
if you don't have specifically cheesecloth, like
A muslin?
muslin or like a t-shirt material or something like that, if you've got like it might kick out a little bit more than cheesecloth, but who cares?
Yeah, now I'm torn. I don't want to tell Rowan about collecting yeast, but being doing it on the cheap is right up his alley.
Right. Well, and this is years and years ago, we had a company that they're still around called Bootleg Biology. They want to have a yeast sample, a wild yeast sample from every zip code in the United States.
Do you know how they're doing?
I don't. It's been a while since I talked to them. But you can the kit that I'm talking about, dead simple, dead easy to produce, just basically a little sugar, honey, or light malt extract in a jar with some water. They have a more involved kit that they sell, their backyard yeast sampler kit. I think it's like $50, but you get a bunch of different equipment with it. And you can take it to agar if you're gonna do like long-term sampling or growing out stuff like that. Like real further down that rabbit hole of the sciencey side of this.
We have learned on this show that every single aspect of this show is a rabbit hole.
Oh yeah.
You can go as far as you want to go. I'm not going too deep because I want the overall. I want to make good mead.
Right. Yeah.
And I want to have options, and this is one of those options now.
Like if you're fascinated with the propagation of different fungi, which yeast is a fungus. The edible mushrooms are a fungus. Mold and nasty crap like that is a contagion for both. That's a fungus too.
Yeah, but I just don't want it.
No, no one wants it. But being able to identify it and say, okay, well, F you, get out.
Yeah,
That's
that's nice too.
a notable, important thing to be able to do. Yeah, no, that if you're really interested in that, hey, there's a big rabbit hole for you to climb down. If you're not interested in that, but you have a weird yeast that you want to be able to sample or freeze or reuse,
Now you can do it.
you're welcome.
Yeah, there it is. Awesome. I mean, yeah, I had to take it back to you because it's something more in your wheels than mine. I'm really glad I sat here through it and had the questions, be able to ask the questions. If anybody out there has questions we have not covered that I did not think of, ask.
Yeah.
For God's sakes, ask.
If I don't know
We
the answers, I can point you in the direction of somebody that probably does better than I do, honestly.
or and don't let him fool you. His research ability is phenomenal. He could probably get the answer.
I mean, honestly, like I have going down the little bit of the rabbit hole that I have with this, I have so much more respect for like the lab guys over at like Omega and Valvin and Fermentis and the people that culture these things and replicate them time and time again to get that level of quality at that scale. So
Amazing.
fucking impressive.
Yeah, that's just, I'm impressed. Okay. Well, Jeff, it's been a great time. I've had a great time talking about this. Now, another notch in the belt for what things we have in our abilities here.
Exactly.
Not
No.
something I'll use a lot. I'll be very blunt about that. I like
I have a
going to see Jake.
feeling, yeah, no, Rowan might have more use for this episode than you do,
Not telling him.
unfortunately.
Not telling him. Won't.
Yeah.
Oh, if I ever say, I think I'll tell Rowan about this, slap my hand again, please.
9.5 times out of 10. Yo, I still just go to Bacchus and say, okay, well, hey, I need some QA23 and some 71B. And hey, do you have any more of that Voss Kvike strain in the freezer or the fridge or whatever? Give me some of that.
I ask for like Kvak, and what's that one with the citrus or the neutral notes on the end of it? I don't even know how to identify. I let him do it for me, but I'm not mad about it because, I like being wise where I know everybody that knows what I need to know rather than being smart enough to know it myself.
Exactly. Yeah.
But anyway, Jeff, great talk. Talk to you next week. Take care of yourself.
You too, buddy.